Welcome to Adequate Yearly Progress, Episode 7. My name is Erin Sterling, and I'm the librarian at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. Every episode, I interview a different teacher and find out why they became a teacher and what they like about it and what they don't like about it. In this episode, I interview my friend, Kendra Hurst, who used to work with me at Eckstein Middle School and now teaches language arts and social studies at Whitman Middle School in Seattle. Kendra is an extremely warm and caring person who I'm always exchanging book suggestions with, and yet also manages to be pretty badass in that she plays roller derby. Seriously. Listen to her talk about her non-traditional schooling growing up, what it's like to have taught in four different schools, and some of her strategies for reaching struggling students. All right, let's go. Hi, Kendra. I'm glad you're on my show. For everyone listening, this is Kendra Hurst. She is a sixth grade teacher at Whitman Middle School in Seattle, Washington. So, Kendra, can you tell me about yourself and why you became a teacher?
So I think that I first became a teacher or considered becoming a teacher after I studied philosophy in college and decided that I definitely didn't want to go to grad school in philosophy and definitely didn't want to go to law school and knew I liked working with kids and wasn't super attracted by the nonprofit route and just sort of fell into teaching that way.
Okay. So you graduated and then went and got a master's or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I started halfway through the year at Teachers College after I took the fall to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And actually the funny thing is, so I was homeschooled and never went to public school. I haven't had the same experience as a lot of my students. And sometimes I would wonder what I'm like. I think back and I wonder what could have inspired me to just like jump into something that I didn't have any experience of really being in a public school before ever.
Right, right. So what's rewarding about being a teacher?
I think that it's the relationships with kids and seeing those grow over the course of the year, seeing them come to trust you as their teacher, see them tell you things they wouldn't have at the beginning of the year, or having them see their own growth and see their own process, and just watching them grow up.
And is there a particular reason that you chose middle school, or was it more about the job that landed?
I initially always wanted to be a middle school teacher. And it also happens to be the jobs that are available. So that works out nicely. But I think I always knew that I wanted that age when they were really developing into whatever choices they were going to make or whatever identities they were going to settle into. Middle school is such a formative few years that that focusing on that, I think, really matters, and getting people that really care about being with middle school students and embracing their crazy and their energy really matters.
Right, right. Were there any early challenges for you?
Student teaching, it was always, I sort of had a backwards experience because in my program, we were supposed to, the very first semester was supposed to be just observe, and then the second was supposed to be you're taking over, and we switched between two different schools. But I had a lot of opportunities to teach in my first placement, and then my second placement. My first placement was in a gifted and talented high school in Manhattan.
Okay.
And then my second placement was in a middle school in East Harlem, so totally different student population. And the school didn't have a ton of structures set up to handle discipline and effectively support kids. And I was not prepared for the experience at all either. I didn't have much background in that.
Right.
And I ended up observing a lot and not teaching a lot. And that was really frustrating to me. And I felt like I wasn't getting the experience that I needed. And then when it came into my first year of teaching, it was quite a jump back into, oh, no, now I'm the one in charge. And I didn't get a lot of the practice that I think would have helped. So it was a lot of, it's always learning on your feet, of course.
Right.
But it was a lot of learning on my, I think in the first couple weeks, like, a kid had thrown a chair across the classroom.
Wow.
And I had one really tough class that year and didn't know how to be proactive about the discipline and didn't know how to have, like, you know, those moments where it's like, okay, I'll talk to a kid about that. I didn't know what that entailed. I was trying to have these super elaborate conversations with kids about really simple things like turning in homework.
Right.
You know, and so learning, it was a pretty steep learning curve.
And was, do you think it was related to the school structure that you were in, or more a result of being a first-time teacher and not having the expertise?
I think it was both. I think that we don't do a very good job of giving new teachers effective mentors once they've really started their first mm-hmm. year. And then I think some of it's just unavoidable.
Right. And was there anything in particular that helped you manage those strategies, which could be either something just you picked up or learned or read or someone else that you talked to?
I think as I developed relationships with other teachers on the floor and learned to seek out help mm-hmm. more and ask for what I needed more effectively,
uh-huh.
then I got a lot more back. Like the teacher next to me, next door to me, oh, I think it was about partway through the year where we started bonding more and I could get more of her ideas and seal more curriculum.
Uh-huh.
And was a little more ready to let go of all my super awesome ideas that I thought were so awesome and then weren't working right. and try something probably a little bit simpler and more effective and just learning to steal more effectively from other people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good strategy.
That's great. And how, so you've been at a number of different schools, right?
Three now.
Wow. So can you talk a little bit about what that experience has been like switching between those different schools?
So I taught eighth grade at one school and then seventh grade at the same school the next year and then switched to teach seventh grade at a different school and now sixth grade at another different school.
Okay.
And I think the positive to that has been seeing a lot of different approaches and being able to take things from school to school and sort of pick and choose what's really going to work for me and what I can share with the people at the new building.
Mm-hmm.
So from a professional development standpoint, that's been kind of fascinating. And I think I have a lot more connections within the district than I would have if I had just uh-huh. been at one building. It's the most frustrating part is never teaching the same thing twice. So right. never being able to hone in on a particular thing and perfect it or, really reflect back on a skill or a unit and being able to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
The one year that I was able to do that was I taught a semester long seventh grade reading class. And that uh-huh. was cool because I just could redo everything in the spring. So I did have that experience. Oh, right,
because it was two semesters or mm-hmm. two separate semesters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the closest that I've come. And someday I will be able to do that again.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, and it was all because of seniority and being displaced. And that is very, like, it's very frustrating. I think the first time I took it really personally, even though I knew it wasn't personal because mm-hmm. it felt so, I'm working as hard as I can and I'm getting good feedback and everybody, like, I'm working with is saying positive things about me. So why is this happening to me?
Right.
You know, but it's not personal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there any other things that are particularly frustrating about being a teacher?
It's never the kids. I mean, there are frustrating kids to deal with at a certain situation or time. But I think I always have serious qualms about the institution as a whole in terms of, and maybe part of that's my own non-traditional background, but mm-hmm. we have so few ways to reach kids and so few structures. Like a 30-student classroom mm-hmm. is not the most effective environment for all students. And
right.
the fact that we don't have any other real alternatives is, it makes you feel trapped, I think, often as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that can be true. Were there any surprises? Like, what surprised you about teaching, especially, I think your case is especially interesting because you had this non-traditional form of schooling and then you know, studied philosophy and then decided to kind of go for a master's and have had experience in a few different schools. So were there any things that have surprised you about teaching?
Well, like every day is practically like something happens every day that's a surprise. But I think I was always super self-motivated as a student,
mm-hmm.
and it took me a while to understand kids that weren't super nerdy or weren't super into school. And like, right. I knew that they existed, and I had friends growing up that were like that, but I wasn't ever in the teacher position uh-huh. to them. So I think encountering apathy towards learning or towards reading, like who wouldn't right. want to read?
No, right?
It was a surprising concept. I think it also was, I think we often have such a negative image of teachers in the media or uh-huh. like, you know, especially older teachers or teachers that have been around. And mm-hmm. It was surprising how consistently across all the schools, how hard people work. In general.
Right.
You know, and even when there are different approaches or conflict within a building, so much of it is still everyone is really thinking about the kids' best interests and is staying hours and hours after school and extra meetings and, you know, sending endless emails about the same kid over and over the course of the year because right. they're just not going to give up. I think that's been a constant good surprise.
Yeah. I agree. I think in light of conflict, I think what I've realized is that most of the people, at least I've been teaching with, are passionate about what they do. Whether how they express their passion or whether I agree with their approach is sometimes very different.
And I think,
but if I keep that in the back of my head, yeah. I think it helps. What were you gonna say?
I think I've also been surprised by how dysfunctional the institution as a whole just shockingly is, and how many, like, you know, I didn't have a presentation station for a while at the beginning of this year, and everyone it took a couple weeks, and I was like, okay, when is this gonna come? Really starting to need it. And then right. everyone was like, wow, you actually got that really fast considering. And
like, that was what other people told you?
Yeah, like, oh, maybe it would take a couple months, or, you know, like and just little things like that add up to such big systematic dysfunctions that have profound yeah. impacts on daily life. So how does this even happen?
Right, right. And I guess I'm interested kind of going back into the idea that you were a really self-motivated kid, and I think a lot of teachers were probably, or at least many of them, because you go into the profession. Are there any strategies you've found to reach the kids who are apathetic that have been particularly useful?
I think the biggest tool that I have is choice. Mm-hmm. Allowing kids as much choice as possible, whether it's choosing the text that they're reading or choosing what they're writing, or just whenever they feel like they have some say in the process and some power and a voice in the classroom community,
uh-huh.
then I think a lot of times that can help hook kids back in who are feeling not included.
Mm-hmm. And along that line, are there any lessons in particular that you're proud of, or maybe it doesn't have to be a particular lesson or unit, but are there any moments that have really made you feel like, oh, this is the right place for me? This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
It always goes back and forth, because some days you walk out of school and you're like, this was beautiful. And then other days it's so frustrating. And I think the units where, like when there was one year I taught a book trailers unit where they were filming things on iPads, and it was just mm-hmm. fun and creative, and they were really proud of their products. And I think almost every day that day, it felt like a good teaching day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, projects in general, I'm always, when they work, we just did a project with clay. Making clay that did not work at all. And that was one of those, oh, why am I doing this? Why am I sweeping up the floor again for the fifth time today? But general projects make me really excited about teaching, and it includes, I think, the choice, and then the kids taking mastery over it. And I love to see them do that, and I love mm-hmm. to see them develop into that. And sometimes also when on the other end of, I guess essays are sort of a project in a way, but mm-hmm. when they come up with a super cool argument, or the kid that hasn't been able to write a paragraph all year finally can write a paragraph, like it's seeing those gains that make you feel like you're in the right place.
Right.
And then back to the relationships, like thinking of the time this year when kids came in before school to tell me that they were going to be tired in class A because she had stayed up with one of her friends to be sure that he made it to a shelter that evening because he had been kicked out of his house. And just knowing that she trusted me with that information, that he, like, at least school for both of those kids was a place where they could be.
Right.
You know, like, that's, you're there for the kids.
Yeah. What do you do? So you mentioned the, like, clay lesson that didn't go as planned. And I'm just wondering, what do you personally do to take away from an experience that didn't go so well? So how do you reframe it? Or, what's something you do with it when it doesn't go as planned? Because everyone has days like that.
Well, this particular one, we sort of, I cut off the last two super elaborate steps that were, you know, we're going to tear the clay map into an elevation map, and that didn't happen. And so I sort of refocused on, okay, well, what was really important for them to take away from this? And tried to make sure that they all got that. And then we wrapped it up early, and now we're moving on.
Okay.
But sometimes I have, like if it's a writing concept, for example, that they don't seem to get, or I didn't explain it very well, then when I realized how to fix it, I'll weave it back into a later unit or lesson, or sometimes we'll go back to it the next day. And sometimes it's like, sorry, kids, I told you this, and that was not right, and let's redo this. And I think they appreciate that, as long as it doesn't happen too often, that honesty of, you know, I can see all of you are frustrated. Let's try this new approach.
Which I think can be actually super helpful in terms of teaching kids that adults aren't perfect either, right?
Yeah.
There's been a lot more I've read lately about teaching kids how to fail and how to bounce back from that. And so I think when adults own up to it, it can be really powerful.
Yeah.
As long as it's not every day, like you mentioned.
Like, whoops, didn't have a plan for today. No, I don't have a plan for today either. No, that would not be good. I'll never make clay things without a sink in the classroom again.
Good to know. I wouldn't have thought of that myself.
Yep.
What advice do you have for people who are thinking about going into the field of teaching?
On the very realistic, practical level, like, English language arts is maybe not, as much as I love it, maybe not the most competitive certification. So thinking, like, on the job scale, if you want options of where to be, think about picking a more or pairing it with, like, special ed or ELL or something that's going to be in demand, because I think that would have given me a lot more options. I think, looking back, I wish I had also taken more time to get to know the options that were out there, because I sort of just jumped into
the options,
a language arts
teaching
certification, and because that was most of my background was in, but, you know, maybe someday I want to go back and do literacy or, you know, like, thinking about the angle that you want to approach it from, I think really matters more than I thought it did. And then I think the second thing is to, like, just to celebrate the small positive moments all the time, and to see how they add up to really big, powerful things. But it's always, it seems to me that the little changes matter most when you're teaching, like figuring out one short, powerful phrase to say.
Right.
Means more than the longest, most beautiful, eloquent soliloquy that you could ever say. So it's the little things that change it.
And do you envision yourself teaching for a long time?
I honestly have no idea. I don't know that I want to stay a classroom teacher forever. I don't think I ever want to go into administration.
I have so much respect for admin. Well, mostly respect.
Never want to do that. But I, you know, I could see investigating somewhere down the road, maybe a more alternative school, something that is more project based, or you doing intervention type stuff, because I liked teaching reading intervention too. Mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. So I always see myself working with kids in some capacity, but whether or not it's a straightforward classroom teaching, I don't know. But I'm happy doing it for now, and will for
a while more.
No, that sounds great. And then I also want you to think about, if you can, if there are any classes or a particular student, obviously you don't have to name names, that have stuck with you for whatever reason. And it could be because it's most recent in your mind. So it could be something from this year, or it could be something from your student teaching. So mm-hmm. are there any ones that stick out?
I think the kids that always stick out are, you know, on either end of the spectrum, of course, like the super high achievers, mm-hmm. or and then the ones that are the most troubled. But a couple, like one kid from this past year comes to mind, especially he's the kid who wound up getting kicked out of his house. And that, mm-hmm. that happened mm-hmm. several times over the course of that year for a variety of different reasons. And, you know, he's the first kid that I had to call CPS over. And,
right.
You know, and the fact that he always came to school. Mm-hmm. He wasn't always focused on schoolwork when he was there, but he was seeking a relationship with adults and with other kids, and was mm-hmm. seeking approval and support. And I think that he taught me a lot in terms of figuring out where the boundaries are of a teacher relationship, mm-hmm. like, you know, what can I do to support this kid, and how can I loop other, you know, like, we always had such great support that wasn't just the classroom teachers, for kids that were in need. So figuring out how to hook kids into that, those resources, was mm-hmm. really good for me as a teacher to know how to do, but also realizing that I could, within the context of the classroom, make an impact on his life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I felt like we helped him, and that was a success story. And then there was another kid from a couple years ago who he was really, really troubled. He wound up transferring out of my class a couple weeks into the year and switching mm-hmm. to, I think, admin felt, you know, maybe he needed a more experienced teacher, or I don't know. You know, he was one of those kids that would never, ever stay in his seat and kept messing with other kids all the time, you know, and would swear all the time in the middle of class. And, you know, and he stands out to me because he switched out of my class, and I mm-hmm. never, and then I think he wound up getting expelled from the school a couple months later. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like the kids that are always falling through the cracks in the system is clearly not working for. So I wonder where he is and what happened to him, and
whether,
you know, it's working out.
And so you've mentioned kind of the relationship side, which I think is so important and also tricky. Like you mentioned, mm-hmm. figuring out the conversations to have. And I definitely have not really figured that out. So how do you manage that balance between really being their teacher, but also an advocate, and also times as a social worker? You know, I feel like teachers are asked to take on a lot of different roles. So how do you manage that, both in terms of, are there any specific things you do to either reach out to students or to keep the right distance, and also personally, like to protect yourself from heartbreak or
because inevitably they all move on at the end of the year.
Yes,
you know, like you get 1 year, and then maybe they come back and say hi.
Right,
and you know, I think that learning more strategies, like watching Kathy from our school, talk
she
to
is
kids,
amazing, super,
you know,
veteran teacher.
Yeah, she just watching that she had strategies, you know, like the whole connecting emotionally with a kid before you're correcting them.
Oh, right.
Whenever I remember to do that, that's always really powerful. or have the patience to do that. But I think that getting more knowledge in the social emotional side of, mm-hmm. of students and kids, and how they're developing, and what what you can actually say to calm them down or help them problem solve.
Right.
Helps because then I can view the conversations through a more teaching lens. You know, mm-hmm. I'm teaching you the skill of processing your own emotions, you know, and then that also helps me to distance myself from the situation in a lot of ways because it's a skill and I know how to teach skills. And, you know, now I just get to look at it through another lens and that helps me see more progress too, because I'm like, oh, well, now you're not screaming swear words at everyone in the middle of class anymore. You are progressing, even though your life may still have a lot of challenges. At least you have one more tool.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And as a final question, what are you excited about for this year? I know the year is already kind of getting going and it's probably won't post for a few weeks. So, but what are you excited about?
I think, so this is the first year that I've taught sixth grade and I'm excited to see them grow up. Right now, they're really, really, really goofy. And that can be a really good thing. And that can be, like, I like that, like someone else was saying today, that, that one of the benefits of sixth grade is they're still individuals. Mm-hmm. And they very much are very strongly themselves because they're still kids. And then as they start to succumb to a little more peer pressure, I think, later on.
Right.
That'll be interesting to watch. But I'm excited about their enthusiasm still.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm excited to start to learn how to do this slightly different age.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you so much for being on my show. That's the end of my show. Thanks for listening. You can find future episodes on adequateyearlyprogress.com, iTunes, and hopefully soon the Microsoft Podcast app. Thanks to the band Inspira's song Follow the Waves for the upbeat music you are dancing to right now. Thanks to freesound.org for the Creative Commons license for user SBYANDIJI's alarm bell sound, user Totia's yeah sound, and user Mental Sanity Off for the background chatter sound. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next on December 14th.